must be true, it must be true. Over the past few months, the COVID-19 pandemic has caused an unprecedented global economic and social crisis. The pandemic itself has significantly, and I mean significantly, affected all aspects of life, including the energy sector. It is that sector that we would, for once, be looking at today on COVID-19 Heroes. It's another Monday. We do this twice every week. And this week on the show, we have yet another hero in a time of crisis. You'll meet our hero pretty soon. Before that, though, my name is Femi Obong-Daniels, and I have the distinct pleasure of hosting the COVID-19 Heroes alongside my friend, brother, and all-round great guy, Wiba Boa. How are you doing, Wiba?
Good morning, Femi. I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right. And the football started this weekend, so I think, you know, we're all happy now.
Yeah, I saw you literally jumping on social media. I'm just excited for you as I am for me.
A little bit of normalcy coming back, which is good to see.
Yeah, it's good for the for the mindset, isn't it?
Exactly.
Welcome to the show. Bring us up to speed, brother.
All right, so good morning, all. We have an absolute treat today. We have Damilola Ogunbiyi, who is Nigeria's superstar when it comes to power issues around the world. She is the MD of Sustainable Energy for All, which is a UN-affiliated organization. And Damilola, Femi, you need to know this, in the energy sector, you know, like Pele, Kanu, JJ, you just need to say one name and people know who you're talking about. With Damilola, it's just... Everyone's talking about Damilola and they know who it is. It's her. One name is all she needs, you know, like the greats of old. So Damilola, welcome to the show today. It's a delight to have you on. I know you're incredibly busy because you don't just deal with Nigeria now, you deal with the whole world. So thank you for taking out time this morning. And how are you doing today?
Thank you for having me. It's great to be on the show. I'm doing great. Again, trying to get a little bit back to normal. I'm stuck in London, which is a bit sad. I'd rather be in Nigeria, but everything's fine. Family's good, so I'm doing okay.
All right, that's good to hear. So maybe you can kick us off with telling us about your organization, Sustainable Energy for All, and then in particular, what role they're playing in this pandemic right now and how power fits into all this.
Okay, thanks for the question. I actually wear two hats. I wear the CEO of Sustainable Energy for All, but I'm also the special representative on the Secretary General of the UN on the whole UN angle. So we've had to look at it at both angles. For SE for All, obviously, you know, it hasn't been business as usual. We've been able to look at what are our processes to make our staff better, but more importantly, what should we be focusing, knowing that the world would have changed after this pandemic. And we've kind of really taken kind of three main approaches, looking at the off-grid and making sure that, you know, the people who are connected, the most vulnerable people connected, how to keep the lights on. Taken a very, very key stance of coordinating healthcare in terms of how do you power isolation centers, but most importantly, how do you power the rest of your healthcare facilities within a country? As we know, like powering healthcare, even in terms of GDP, gives you 4x of GDP. So that's been really, really critical to us. And then finally, what does Recover Better look like in the energy sector? So we have a very unique position to be able to change the way African and at least Caribbean governments actually look at what recovery is. So those have been the key focus for SE for All and kind of just getting the staff and the UN actually to rally around this and making sure energy is a key focus point as we try and recover better.
Well, the impact of this whole pandemic on the energy sector, Damilola, has been immense. This outbreak has already contributed to a dampened demand for oil, resulting in plummeting prices and declining production, especially when you consider the Russia-OPEC price war going on. But that's only one half of the story. A similar trend of falling demand and price reduction is observed in the electricity sector. In Europe, I know you stay in the UK. Europe itself has faced what is called record collapse in electricity prices. Many European countries are seeing power pricing turn negative where they are. And in countries where before now, they'd only experienced some what wasn't normal is now normal. Such a situation is considered normal in countries during weekends or holidays, and now there are negative figures also on weekdays. You know the Nigerian situation. We are in trouble in good times already. Here we are with our energy deficiencies and all. Looking at it globally first, how critical is energy access to global recovery during this pandemic period?
Well, energy access saves lives. I mean, I've been advocating it all my life. I don't think anything is more important than providing people their basic needs for energy. But there are different levels of energy, right? There's energy for household levels, which will be different from commercial, which will be different from manufacturing. And one of the key things that we've always been advocating is the need for clean energy. You can see the difference in terms of those electricity figures you mentioned between countries who have really made a key effort into energy transition, focusing more on solar, wind, and hydro, compared to countries who are predominantly focused on delivering power through, you know, diesel and other different types of fossil fuel. So it's, you know, there's different levels of conversation, but it's not coincidence that you have people like the EU now putting the development, the Green Deal back on the table. How are we going to make people accountable? Because in terms of, you know, we still have to conform to Paris agreements. We still have to make sure globally that we recognize what using bad energy or dirty fuels actually does to our economy, and what does just transition move mean. So there's so many different levels, but I think right now, as an African and more importantly as a Nigerian, what is more shocking is, you know, the fact that 28% of health centers that are actually powered in Africa globally. So there needs to be a specific lens on the most vulnerable people, rural populations, and also healthcare. And we can't have it like how we had it in Ebola crisis, where everybody's very concerned during the pandemic, and as soon as the pandemic leaves, they go back to business as usual. So one of the key parts of my roles with a lot of actors, with WEBA as well, is to make sure government understands that business as usual just doesn't work. And more important, if you actually do something in a sustainable way, there's vast amount of opportunities instead of jobs and increased GDP that can bring you as a country.
So, Damilola, the statistic you just used was 28%, you said, of health facilities in Africa have power?
28% of health facilities in sub-Saharan Africa have electricity.
Yes. Have it, not have not. Wow. Okay. So the vast majority do not have it. So, yeah. I know there's a big program that you're trying to help put together across multiple aid organizations, World Bank and others, to address this. And I think what you're saying is maybe some people will look at this and say, well, you know, COVID will end in a couple of months. Do we really want to put in all this effort? But I guess your focus is, look, whether COVID goes on for 2-3 more months or two years, we need this anyway. So this is an impetus to get it done. So can you tell us about that platform that's being put together and the funding that is trying to be kind of mobilized to make this happen? What does that look like?
I mean, there's two levels of kind of platform. I do really believe that this is also a response for governments, and governments should have it as policy to power their healthcare centers. in a sustainable way. And then the other platforms is repurposing existing loans. A lot of governments have loans with the bank, have loans with the World Bank, African Development Bank, another AFD, the French Development Bank, and other institutions, and try and repurpose it for focusing on powering healthcare centers, but not just powering healthcare centers during the crisis, how you have a long-term sustainability plan to make sure these institutions or these facilities or these labs are powered over a period of at least 10 years, hopefully looking at 20 years. What I think is more critical, and I think it's the messaging that people start off from. They always start to focus on, you should do this because of climate, or you should do this because of other type of benefits. But the truth is, you should do this because you want your people to survive, and it's a mortality issue. And more important is, statistics have shown countries with better healthcare facilities actually grow better. So there's actually an economic angle to this as well, and that's what, in my role, I'm trying to bring out, to show what is the opportunity of really taking energy access and energy transition into cleaner fuel out of a diesel-based economy seriously.
Mm-hmm. And I guess you're looking at developing countries actually at this point, because these are the countries on the receiving end of the stick. If the bigger, larger countries are suffering, just imagine what is going on here. And again, when we say developing countries, there are developing countries and there are developing countries. And sometimes from a Nigerian perspective, I wonder whether we do qualify to be put in similar breaths as countries like Brazil, countries, even China, as a country on the rise. But leaving all of that, I just wanted to ask you, bringing it home to the kind of subject that concerns Nigerians a whole lot, cooking solutions, clean cooking solutions, now more than ever before, it's the time to fight this virus, which has shown itself to be a respiratory illness. So what role should the sector, the energy sector, be playing now? As a matter of fact, what role is your organization, Sustainable Energy for All, playing globally to ensure clean cooking solutions?
Okay, I mean, in terms of clean cooking solution, again, globally, there's 2.9 billion people that don't have access to clean cooking. I mean, we always talk about electrification, but clean cooking is actually quite bad just because of all the harmful effects it actually has. And more importantly, 70% of Africans don't have access to clean cooking, which is why it's the number one cause of fires in a lot of homes. It's the number one cause of a lot of respiratory illnesses. What we're trying to do is trying to find solutions for clean cooking that suits how people cook. What people don't understand is, if you just tell someone, here's a clean stove, and they had been cooking with firewood all their lives, there's issues with the taste, the smell, all sorts of different things. So educating women is really key about the time it saves, about the fact you can still get the right quality of food, about the fact that in the long run, it's actually cheaper for you. But it's actually a full behavioral change. And this can only be done with accurate data and actually educating women on how to do it. They've done it quite well in Kenya in kind of having clean cooking cookbooks with still all the traditional dishes, but showing them how to do it. There's been lots of cooking schemes, as you know, through the years, in back and forth in Nigeria. But the answer is not to just give people clean cooking, it's to try and change their mindsets. And why this is so, so critical is because there's so many links between going out to get firewood or any type of wood with gender-based violence, right? So I will reel out some really, really shocking statistics that I only found out. You have 1 in 7 chance of getting raped if you're going to go and get fuel wood. You have 1 in 6 chance of being beaten by your own spouse if food is not ready on time and you're not back on time. So this just goes beyond climate, a harmful thing. There are a lot of women at risk here. So that's why it's so key as countries to calculate information, get it ready. And more important, what we're really trying to do in SE4, try and tag on provision of clean cooking to also provision of energy access. There are a lot of mini-grid programs that tagging on the provision of a clean stove or any different solution can actually be part of that, and that's what we're really trying to champion.
So Damilola, you've talked about the lack of power for healthcare facilities, the incredible importance of clean cooking and so on. And obviously these are issues that are not just because of COVID. This is a long-term thing, but you talk about recovering better, how the power sector can recover better from this. So how do we, take these pretty dismal situations and statistics and use this as an impetus to come back better and stronger? What are you advocating? How do we do that?
Well, there are two key things we're really trying to advocate. One, that at least a quarter, 25% of your stimulus packages should be focused on clean, renewable energy for every country, at least for Africa and Caribbean, to be honest. And then there should also be investment in upstream. So as Weba, you're finding, we're now, even if we want to do mass solar hybrid solutions for hospitals, anything, there's not enough equipment locally available. So we're really advocating local assembly, local manufacturing, and creating jobs and a value chain that way. What this does is it gives you a multiplier of benefits, increases your GDP. It's the fastest way for you to increase job creation. So if you really want to recover better, for every 1,000 people you connect to a mini grid, creates 25 jobs. There's no comparison if you do it with fossil. It's the cheapest energy provision, and improved healthcare, agricultural outcomes, and also improve outcomes for gender. So those are the type of things we're looking at. There's a bunch of enablers to get us there, but that is. We are really trying to get governments to sign up to and make policy while they're putting together their stimulus or economic recovery packages now.
And are they listening? Are governments listening in Africa?
Some of them are, to be honest. I was quite shocked with the amount of people who actually reached out to me when this crisis broke and I've been talking to. And I think why they did that is because you're breaking it down from energy language, right? Which is what they normally get, and they're normally disconnected to. Anything you can tie to any government, not just African government, to GDP and jobs, it's a lot easier sell. So that's what we're starting with, right? And by default, we will, it would be better energy, it will be better from the climate, but we're not just looking at it at the climate lens. And I think we'll be quite surprised. I mean, some African governments have done some great things over the years, but we just need to keep pushing the message, especially in a time of pandemic.
All right. This pandemic will come and go. It has a start date. It will definitely have an end one. And someday, life will continue. It will either be completely gone or it will be just there in the recesses of our minds, something we have to live with and deal with. Let's talk about global collaboration. And I'm thinking back again to the Paris Agreement and the Sustainable Development Goals. I'm wondering, post-COVID-19, what is the impact that we expect? What is the impact right now as we speak towards global, that would aid global response to this particular pandemic?
I think what the pandemic has shown us that energy access and energy transition is key, right? So if you were a country and you were running on, 80% renewables, you wouldn't really mind that much if oil and gas actually went down. Do you see what I'm trying to say? Mm-hmm. There's a direct link to it, right? So the cleaner you go, the less vulnerable you are later on. And that's what the Paris Agreement's about, trying to get us back to that 1.5 degrees where we are collectively, we are collectively helping ourselves as countries, but we're also helping the world. There's no point people going around saying that, Africa only emits 2%. That's fine, but Africa will feel all the effects of the great emitters coming down, and we see it with our weather changes and how things are and some extreme heat that we might not have had before. So this is one of the key things that as a world we have to get together, because you can't say, oh, he's not doing this, so I won't do this, because it's going to come back and affect you. So I think Paris is really important. The other thing that's really important is COP. And, you know, this is where you make some very, very firm agreements in terms of, you know, your climate. So COP was meant to be this year. It's next year. COP26 is next year in the UK. But the year after is an African COP. So COP27 is actually in Africa. That changes everything. That's bringing it back home and saying that what are us as Africans going to do? And this isn't just, you know, your usual Morocco has done a really nice, you know, solar power plant or anything. This is bringing it home and saying country by country, you need to really get your act together, because you're actually hosting something now, showing how Africa will thrive. It's the same thing as the reason why I wanted to make sure our first event at SE4 was in Africa. So we're having in Kigali in February. Hope you guys can come. Again, bringing it back home. You know, when people keep talking about the disconnect between the global south, we need to make sure we have these events and these forums in the global south and make sure we are part of the conversation and, more important, part of the solution. So for me, it's critical to just get more diversity into the conversation and make sure that we're part and parcel of these things that are going to affect us, you know, 20, 30 years down the line. But we're part of driving the policies, and we're part of making sure Paris is actually successful.
So Damilola, you talked about bringing it home. So let's actually literally bring it home. You know, Nigeria Info, obviously this is being broadcast around the world, but the majority of listeners are in Lagos, listening from their homes or wherever they are. And many of the people in government used to be your colleagues, you used to work in the government in Lagos. What would you advise them now? How can Lagos implement some of the things you're talking about so that, again, they can also recover better in the power sector?
I mean, I think we're quite lucky with the Lagos team, especially with the commissioner in charge. I mean, I think they're doing what's right in terms of the isolation centers and, you know, social distancing moving forward. But just like cities as well, the same to countries, there has to be a certain, you know, quite large chunk of your budget or your loans dedicated to energy access. So the same thing I'm telling you guys, same thing I'm going to tell, I've been saying at the country level, also have to be viable to small states. And you know, Lagos already had quite a thriving IPP market, decentralized. They're looking for many solar solutions. So it's more like just giving them the tools to make sure they actually achieve it, because that's a lot of people. It's the same thing as a country. It's big. It's actually bigger than a lot of countries that I advise. But I think the key things is just tackling the health emergency, focusing on social impact, economic response and recovery, and then just the global responsibility to recover better, and understanding that we are not alone. Our actions speak mm-hmm. actual volumes. And, you know, in terms of, I know I always go back country-wise, but in terms of the energy access story, If three countries in Africa don't hit the targets, which is Nigeria, Ethiopia, and Congo, we will fail. We would not achieve energy access. And that would be quite catastrophic globally.
Damilola Ogunbi, CEO, Sustainable Energy for All. How eye-opening, how insightful, impactful this conversation has been. Thank you very much for being a part of this, and well done for the hard work you're doing. We'll be following through, and like you hoped, between Weber and I, we'll try to make sure that we either both make ourselves available for some of these events that could help our cause on the continent going forward. Thank you very much for being a part of this conversation.
Thank you so much for having me.
You are indeed a hero.
But Femi, and let me say one more thing. So Damilola is leading this global organization. She reports directly to the UN Secretary General. Mm. And this is a sector where she is usually the only African in the room. And so I think it's just wonderful that she can bring the passion from her experience in Lagos, from her experience at the federal government level, from her experience all across Africa, and then take it there and actually bring, like she says, bring it home. Fantastic. Because otherwise these conversations and decisions are made by people who don't know anything about it and aren't from here. So thank you, Dami Lola, for being our advocate out there and sometimes being the lone voice, and we appreciate that.
Thank you so much, and I look forward to seeing you guys at Kigali in February.
We look forward to it. If you have questions that you would, stuff that you would like Dami Lola to help out with, experiences you want to share, you can share. You can reach out to her on social media or reach out to Sustainable Energy for All. That's SE for All. Org. That is SEFORALLORG. Dami Lola, you're popular on social media as Dami Lola SDG7. And I'm following you. Well done for all you do.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful show.
Thank you very much. Weba.
Thank you, Dami Lola.
You and I have got another hero lined up for Wednesday, haven't we?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. So we're going from the global, we're going back to the very local. We have Dr. Ige from the Nigeria Institute of Medical Research. So she'll be joining us to talk about testing on the front lines. So she's going to break down some of the complicated medical stuff that you and I don't really understand. And she's going to break it down for the listeners so that everybody knows exactly how it works and what's going on right here in Lagos.
So we do have a date now, don't we?
Yes, we do.
See you guys.
As in, it's on Wednesday. Yes.
See you guys on Wednesday. Have a wonderful time. And don't forget, stay safe.